Somewhere across the bifrost, way up high.
Welcome back to the latest episode of Across the Bifrost. My name is Sung Soo, and joining me at the moment, as he always does, is my dear co-host Pat Dunford. And today, we will regale you with tales of Black Order. Some good, some bad, but all factual. But first, Pat, how you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks, TT. I'm excited to talk about Black Order. This is an affiliation that we haven't mentioned for a long time on the podcast. But, of course, they've just had some new updates previewed by Atomic Mass Games, part of the big refresh of the game that's happening in November. And there's a lot of new stuff to discuss with them.
Yeah, there certainly is. And before we dive into that, though, we, of course, have to do Sleeve It and Heave It. And I thought we could do Blood to Spare this week, since we are talking about Black Order, Pat.
I think that's a really good choice. I'll read out the card. Blood to Spare is the Black Order affiliated card. It's reactive, and it is when a Black Order character would be dazed by an enemy effect, it may spend 3 power to play the card. The character immediately performs an attack before gaining the dazed token. If this attack results in the character removing damage, it is not dazed. This is a card that has quite a history on the pod, right? We discussed it a long time ago.
Yeah, it certainly did, and we're in the 100s of episodes now, so we've definitely been doing this a long time. I believe, Pat, and correct me if I'm wrong, we initially rated this card pretty high.
Mm-hmm.
And then we maybe think we made a mistake.
Yeah, when we did our first box review with Blood to Spare, we used the bar of, it's a card that gives you an action. Actions are good. They're usually worth tactics cards, and out-of-activation actions are especially good. And then after playing some games with it, more and more games, I remember having a conversation with you where we reassessed it with the feeling that, okay, when you can make it work, it's good, but actually it's very situational because it only triggers when you're dazed, right? You don't have that many Black Order characters on the table, and maybe not that many of them will become dazed over the course of the game. So that, like, the finite number of opportunities to play this card is pretty low. And if you end up in one of those situations where you don't have a compelling attack to use, maybe because you're out of range or there's no good targets or whatever, it can end up being more narrow than you might expect on first glance.
And I think it's also worth pointing out, we reviewed this way back CP15 when Corvus and Proxima were like spoiled out of a warehouse in like Denmark. And it was so far away from all the other Black Order releases. We really just had the two in a vacuum with the time gem.
Yes.
And without the reality, these are obviously very different characters. So for a little bit of context there. But I've actually become a little bit higher on Blood to Spare as we've kind of gone along. And the 10 tactics cards definitely a reason for that. Some of the reasons I'll go into real quickly are Black Order. And some of this is slightly old news. Black Order has definitely, in my opinion, become a single roster affiliation. A single affiliation roster. Due to the way that the gem mechanics worked out and the way that you pretty much just had, like, Swiss Army Knife Thanos, he just kind of fit into any threat point. I really like this on there. And the value of the attacks you could get out of their two main characters, being Thanos and Corvus Glaive, were just kind of huge, in my opinion. Either one of them are able to clap back with an incredibly powerful attack, which can just be very punishing. And since both of them are usually running on gems, I'm not as concerned with the power. Because one of the negatives of the card, if I remember correctly when we said it way back when, was, well, I'm just stealing power that I would be using when I got my flip activation. And as we all know, a flip activation is kind of a big deal. So, again, I've been higher on Blood to Spare. I've liked it a lot more, even for just the functionality of getting to possibly move my characters because of Corvus to help control where I drop something that I'm holding makes a difference. But what do you think of Blood to Spare, Pat? Are you still kind of meh on it? It is, as we said years ago, it is a free action.
It is a free action, and you're right that in the right circumstances, it's really good. In addition to everything you mentioned, I wanted to emphasize Death's Decree on Thanos, right? This is a lovely synergy where you can make any Black Order character hit back really hard when they get dazed, if they're within range to benefit from Death's Decree as well. I think it has a place. Right now, for me, it's on this kind of borderline where you can take it, but it's clearly not a slam dunk into your selection of tactics cards. Even if that goes up to 10 tactics cards, it just might not make your five enough. Now, this could all change if tactics cards get reshuffled, if there's any changes to the BNR list. But as it stands, right now, I'm heaving this card, but it sounds like you're sleeving it.
Yeah, I'm still sleeving. I'm not sleeving it a lot. And to your point, Pat, it is one of those cards that often makes my roster, but then kind of doesn't actually make my team, mm-hmm. which maybe means I should look at pivoting out of it. But I've enjoyed Blood Despair when I was playing Black Order. And again, my main thing was I have a hard time imagining a game where either Corvus or Thanos don't get dazed. Mm-hmm. Now, if neither of those characters are getting dazed, I'm probably just winning anyway. And if they are getting dazed, I like to have this threat to kind of bring them back into it. So I'm definitely on the sleeve it, but patrons, you can let us know on Discord what you think of Blood Despair. Let us know whether you're sleeving it or heaving it. And then honestly, let us know after we go through this Black Order review what you think about it, because maybe, Pat, your opinion will change after we talk about all these things. So
maybe. I tell you what, TT, there's one thing that will make me dust this card off and put it in a sleeve, at least to try, if nothing else. And that's if there is ever a release of the game that makes the last line of text relevant. If there is ever a way that my Black Order character can actually heal damage and stop themselves from being dazed by playing this card, then it would get a whole new lease of life for me. But I'm pretty sure that these changes don't make that a possibility.
So there are so many tactics cards now. I honestly don't know if you could trigger this with another tactics card to get a heal on yourself.
I don't think so.
I don't think you can.
One day that line of text will be relevant. We'll see the Matrix and we'll see the seeding from years past has finally come to fruition.
That's fine. In episode 200, I'll replay this sleeve it or heave it, so I'll look like a clairvoyant genius. So Black Order had some pretty big reworks, and I think it's probably best to start with the couple that came to us first, with Corvus Glaive and Proxima Midnight. So they've obviously been kind of a plague, in some people's words. They've been an extremely powerful couple. I enjoyed playing the crud out of them when I was playing them. I understand they can definitely feel a little oppressive, because honestly, Corvus's damage output was just ludicrous. So, Pat, what has happened? Did they buff Corvus, or did he get tweaked downwards lately?
He and his wife did get tweaked down. The power couple took a very marginal hit. Both characters had their husband and wife abilities changed. So husband of Proxima Midnight, wife of Corvus Glaive, in two ways. The first is the power cost went from 0 to 1 power. And the second is that the range went down from range 4 to range 3. So that makes the ability more expensive to use and harder to use in pretty impactful ways. On top of that, Corvus got an extra little tweak in that his death blow, the flurry, became harder to trigger. And this is not a very surprising change, considering we were talking about Medusa and Valkyrie on a recent episode, right? And those characters had similar tweaks. In Corvus's case, he now needs to get a shield in addition to his wild to flurry. And of course, a shield is not a very appealing result to him normally, because he's very good at rolling crits. He counts blanks as successes. Shields can often be the only way that he is failing to get damage through. So I think it's interesting that they gave him a shield specifically for that flurry effect.
So you said there were minor changes. I actually think they're, I actually think they're pretty major. Let's start with husband and wife. So the power cross honestly doesn't bother me that much. They each have an interesting power cycle anyway. Corvus normally starts the game with Truth Reality. Proxima is the one that usually struggles for a bit of power. Definitely can't maybe changes the order in which you activate them to trigger it, right? I think changing it to range 3 is huge. Now, this is a slight exaggeration, but I feel like range 4 means no matter where I am on the table, I'm going to get to trigger this. And range 3 means, oh my god, this is really close. They're never going to be in range. But in reality, though, it does change. Can Proxima move to the middle of the board and still chain her husband's activation afterwards? And moving this to range 3 means she cannot.
Yes, it's a big deal. I think this has massive impact. And you're right. When I said these are small changes, I meant the number of changes is small.
Oh, okay, that's fair.
This change to husband and wife.
Numerically, this is a very small amount of changes.
Yes, but the impact is huge. And you're right. It has a huge impact on every turn of the game for these characters. In particular, their turn 1 options completely change now, right? Because, like you said, you can't move one of them into the middle of the table to interact with an objective and immediately then have the other one activate. which means a lot of their turn one opening plays are reduced in power. You can't do things with Corvus of Proxima where you can steal a bunch of objectives before your opponent can interact. And if you want to interact at all, you can't use Husband and Wife to have one less priority activation, right? So one of the things that Black Order could do is they could effectively always count Corvus and Proxima as one character for the sake of priority. And now if they face another team with very few characters, they actually can't do that on turn one if they also want to interact. So if your example at 15 threat facing off against like Magneto, Scarlet Witch, and Sabretooth, right? 3 versus 3. Look, the point is, if you play like a 3 versus 3 team, right? And Black Order doesn't have priority, they can't necessarily keep priority going into turn two anymore.
Well, they could with Corvus, right? As long as Corvus goes first, Corvus can interact, pay for Husband and Wife. Proxima then gets to activate without spending her power. Proxima can still move.
Right, but what is he interacting on?
And right, then and the Thanos ranges are
going
tight.
First.
Yeah, there's like, all sorts of issues with it, but
makes it super awkward, right?
Absolutely.
Maybe you can, but maybe you pay too high a price to do it.
You lose so much flexibility, right? And, yeah. I think that's really what we're getting to, right? Before, this couple could do almost anything. And I think the common thing, and Cookie will yell at me because I'm oversimplifying his love child here. The common thing was they're going to get up or equal to you in scenario objectives. And you know that they're just going to grind better than you can. They're just going to put an incredible amount of pressure on grinding for you. Thanos is going to be utilized to help get a secure benefit by just moving you around or pulling you into this meat grinder. So you're going to have to kind of reach into them, and they really punish reaching. And now it is just harder for them to get that scenario advantage or parity and maintain priority, right? They're just a much less flexible duo that way. And you have, to your point, Pat, right, less control over who has priority for the entire game.
Absolutely. You also, of course, have more ways to play around them as the opponent because you can take advantage of that shorter range for Husband and Wife. You can push them, throw them, and control them in ways that make it a little bit more awkward for them. And Corvus in particular is very precious with his power. He wants to be spending power in large chunks to get his Glaive's Edge and Deathblow effects, and having to pay a single point of power could be enough to disrupt that, right? Because he's paying in 3 and 4 cost increments, a single extra point of power could stop him from using one of those effects, and that can be a huge impact on his effectiveness.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when you factor in the all you've got Corvus rosters, which really want him to have just an insane amount of power on him. And like you said, a lot of that power just came from Glaive's Edge striking, followed up by a death blow. But anyway, so Husband and Wife, we think, is a pretty major change. The death blow change is an interesting one. I hadn't considered that. That's the only die face that was actually a failure for him. Because you're right.
Yeah.
Glaive starts to counts the blanks. Reality gives him a crit off the failure. So yeah. Every die... But now, the other side of the coin is now every die roll on a death blow attack you want.
Yeah, you're happy with any right? results.
Yes!
So that is a really nice silver lining. It's like, whatever I roll, it's all good.
Don't want to hear any bad things about your rolling for death blow. I think this is obviously warranted. I mean, the amount of times Corvus's high-end damage potential was just bonkers, right? And Deathblow is still a really good spender because it's two actions rolled into a single spender, right? And then if you get the third action, you're just in, like, gravy land. So still very good. I still think the couple are potent. And I think I said this a couple pods ago, maybe. I think they'll disappear for a while. And then they'll just kind of come back into the light. Honestly, I think it'll be a lot like Thanos, where he was popular, then he fell off, and then people are like, wait a minute, he's actually really good at these things, and he showed back up again. And I would anticipate seeing Corvus and Proxima in the future. And a hot take, I think Proxima is going to be more popular in the short term than Corvus is, because she just fits into so many rosters with a very interesting, fast assassin role.
Yeah. I think one more thing to consider, and we've talked about this in previous episodes recently, but to reiterate, in case anyone missed it, one of the changes that's happening in these rules updates is in roster composition with gems, right? And the fact that gems don't take up a character space, but instead you assign them to characters. This is a big deal for Black Order in particular, and it's going to be a theme that we look at again and again in this episode. But for Corvus and Proxima, this change, honestly, is a straight buff, because Corvus was wedded to the reality gem even before Proxima, right? It's the number one thing that you will always take together. And so that change for this couple is just an improvement where it gives you an extra roster slot. And so you're right. People might be a little bit down on the power couple because of their nerfs, but getting an extra roster slot back is a big deal, and it does make them more easy to include outside of their own affiliation.
Yeah, fantastic points. And I'm actually really interested to see what the Black Order affiliation kind of mutates into with all these upcoming changes, and that'll be an exciting one to go through. But again, today Pat and I are just kind of covering the changes here. So Corvus and Proxima, well, honestly, their marriage is on the rocks. They were definitely happier beforehand. But they're going to therapy. They're going to work for it. They're committed to each other. Okay? They're committed to each other. So I have faith in them. So next up, the most maligned character in the MCP universe, the incredible Ebony Maw, got a much-needed shot in the arm, didn't he?
He got several shots in the arm. Oh, my goodness. This Ebony Maw is outstanding. I love this guy now.
Yeah, so where do we start? Because there were kind of a lot of changes on Ebony.
Yeah, so the summary of the changes, the long summary, is his base stats improved so that his energy defense went from 2 to 4, and his total stamina pool went from 11 to 13 because he got 2 extra stamina on his injured side. Then on top of that, his Black Tongue builder attack got an extra dice of damage, going from 5 to 6. And on top of that, his Mind Over Matter ability changed. So it used to be that it was kind of like Magneto's effect. You would spend power to increase your defenses to his Mystic of 6. Now it's like Enchantress's, where your opponent can spend power, and if they don't, all of your defenses are 6. And then on top of that, he got a whole new superpower. One that we've already seen on Cassandra Nova, telekinetic deflection, that lets you spend 2 power to ignore the effect of a collision, which I love because it's so thematic for Ebony Maw. There's a really cool scene in one of the Avengers movies where someone throws a car at him. I think Hulk throws a car at him and he just stands still and the car slices in half and parts on either side. So I love that he has that ability in game now.
Spoilers, by the way, if you haven't seen the movie, Pat probably just ruined it for you. I think they're obviously huge changes, right? And I'm just going to say it again. His base defense is 6, which is just incredibly high. His energy defense went from 2 to 4. So, and he can ignore collisions, which was his main... Well, I mean, he had a couple of flaws before, right? But you would just kind of throw things at him and he'd fall over. And now he's been able to mitigate that as well. I think he's an incredibly potent character. And I think it's worth taking a minute and reading through some of his highlights, right? With Black Tongue is now a 6 dice Mystic Builder that has a wild trigger, just one wild, where you can advance the character short afterwards. That's an incredible builder.
It's so good. It has.
Is that the
shades.
Best builder in the game?
Well, it's not the most damage, right?
Is it the best builder in the game?
Okay, so look, here's my rating. In terms of damage, it's like an A. It's not an A plus, but a 6 dice builder is almost as good as it gets. And at 5 threat level, you couldn't expect any better. It's not as good as like Scarlet Witches. Doesn't get the rerolls from MODOK. Doesn't have the sap, but it's really good. It only gives 1 power, and this is the big knock against it, right? It is like Ebony Maw's power economy is still difficult to manage, and this is probably his biggest limiting factor, which we can talk about in a sec. But the wild trigger is absolutely sensational. And when it triggers, it's like you did Cassandra Nova's Spender. This is another 5 threat character who is comparable to Moore. It's like you did her Spender, but as an attack that gave you power instead of cost you power. So, yeah, I think anytime you roll the wild, you're going to feel like it's the best builder in the game.
And I think you do bring up a good point that he is actually still a very power strapped model, and it is interesting, right? You have a little bit of leeway there because he has the 7 stamina. So the odds of him getting downed or dazed in a single attack are pretty low, right? Mm-hmm. But how much power do you want to sit on for his defensive ability and deflection, whether you want to use the throw, how do you want to spend out, is going to be interesting. And similar to Enchantress, in the mid to late game, that 2 physical defense can start being brought against him. But again, I think he's a really, really compelling and interesting choice now. Worth noting, he is not immune to stun. He is not immune to poison. So if you can do some weird power drain on him, he doesn't love that.
Yeah, because he's getting so much power from incredible psychic potential, and his static builder is limiting what he can do. You're right. If you can get that combo of stun and poison on him, is going to have a really bad time.
Yeah, so I like the changes to Ebony a lot, obviously. I don't think anyone's been against the changes. And in the after the credit scenes, I think we'll kind of jump in there and talk as close to ranking things as we can. I think we'll take a look at the five threats because a lot has kind of changed in that water there. But I like Ebony Maw. I like all the changes he's brought to the table. I'm excited to see him out there. I don't think we'll see him in Black Order a lot, but I do think we'll see him as an unaffiliated five that really fits in some affiliations, especially affiliations that can just slip him a couple points of power here or there.
Yeah, I do think he's very compelling as an unaffiliated choice. I'd be tempted to include him in lots of different teams. I want to try him out in Avengers. I want to try him out in Convocation. He does seem really cool. I'm speculating, of course. We'll see how the meta settles. But I think you might see him in Black Order, just because Black Order are losing flexibility in their points values with the gem changes, but they're gaining roster slots. And it might be that you just want an affiliated five now. And Ebony Maw is a sensationally good five threat character. So it just might pan out that there is room for him after all.
I mean, that's definitely an interesting take. And I guess my mind is like, outside of a couple like savants, like I don't think we'll see a ton of Black Order right away. I think it'll take a little while in the dojo and the tank for them, because it is a dramatic list building change. Just have to staple these gems onto people. And it's worth noting with Ebony Maw. So here's the Mind Gem and the Space Gem. We might as well hit it real quick. The Space Gem was brought down in cost, right? The Space Gem used to be two threat, and it was reduced to one threat. I don't think anything else changed on it. Is that right, Pat?
Yeah, it looks exactly the same to me. So that's a big deal, of course. Big deal for Ebony Maw, who could take it, also for Loki, and obviously for Thanos.
And the Space Gem, for those people who don't know, because why would you have ever taken a Space Gem previously? It's a two-cost superpower. Choose this character or another ally character within three and place it within two of its current position. The superpower can only be used once per turn. So the gem itself costs one, the power on it costs two. It's an interesting gem. Anytime we can kind of place things around, there's a big benefit. So with that in mind, do you ever see a gem being stapled onto Ebony? Do we want a six-threat Ebony?
I think it's interesting. I think both the Mind Gem and the Space Gem are very good. I think they're the conversation for two of the better gems. So I think either one is worthy of consideration. And the one you pick might depend on your strategy. I think the reason that you didn't see Ebony with gems before was because Ebony himself wasn't worth carrying them. And that's not true anymore. Like, Ebony now is a good character. So I think you might. I like the Space Gem as a way to give him and also Loki, and I suppose Thanos, a kind of a pseudo charge option as well, where you could use it as a way to get them more attack actions, right? They can teleport themselves forwards. And I think that could be appealing with Ebony in the right circumstance. Plus, of course, moving allies. The Mind Gem we know is good. We know it's popular, right? It sees a lot of play on Loki and Thanos already. So I have to assume that people are going to experiment with Ebony using one or more gems. And once again, it might come down to needing specific threat values in your roster. And you might just decide, look, I want to play Black Order. I want as few characters as possible. And it helps me to have a five threat option in Corvus with Reality and a six threat option in Ebony with either Space or Mind.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, the two immediate things come to my mind is we talked about Ebony not having a ton of power, right? Is he going to have the power to give himself the space charge? And to your point, like, getting himself free attack with a Black Tongue guarantees him 1 point of power back. Is he going to have the power to use the Mind Gem? My other concern with the Mind Gem is, like, I don't really know what range Ebony Maw wants to live at. To me, it still seems like Ebony Maw wants to utilize his range 4 and his long throw as much as he can, right? Where the Mind Gem requires you to get into range 3. Now, maybe you can use the Mind Gem defensively to, like, keep people backwards the entire time, but I don't know. It'll be interesting to actually see it on the tabletop. I do like Ebony Maw. I didn't think it would be that popular having him with the gem on it, but I get what you're saying. It's interesting because I think a legitimate shift is you now have Corvus at 5 versus previously, right, where you had Corvus and Proxima at 8, or you know what I mean? I think there's going to be a mindset change because I don't think the Corvus is always going to be stapled to Proxima and vice versa.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what people will come up with. But yeah, I definitely think Ebony Maw as a character looks really appealing, and both of the gems are worthy of consideration with him. Whether or not you go with them, time will tell.
All right, so the first gem I believe we ever had access to also got a reduction as well, right? And that's the time gem. And I believe the only change for the time gem is that threat was also brought down to 1 from 2. Is that correct?
No, TT. Far from it. The time gem got a total rework. So the time gem used to be the most expensive...
Oh, it doesn't give you a free action anymore.
Right. It used to be the most expensive and most powerful gem, right? It was 2 cost, and it gave you a free action. And people tried it with Doctor Strange and Corvus, and it was okay. And then people played it with Thanos, and it was pretty good. And the problem that AMG spoke about a little bit in their article was that it makes Thanos so good at exploiting certain crisis combinations, where he's got loads of power and 3 actions, and he can scoop up a bunch of extracts or whatever. So they completely reworked it, and now it's a very different ability. So the new time gem only costs 1 power, and it gives you a 2-cost reactive superpower when the character is attacking before the calculate success or failure step. At the end of the modified die step of the attack, you could use the superpower. The attacking and defending characters reroll all of their attack and defense dice, including failure results. So this is basically giving you the recalibration matrix card every time you attack for 2 power.
I'm obviously just processing this now. I don't... I don't know what to think about it.
Should I help you out?
Well, okay, so I guess let me tell you my issue with the calibration matrix. I don't love that it's everyone rerolls all their dice, mm-hmm. right? That's always felt... mad at me in recalibration matrix, obviously, we just never take. Sorry about your podcast name, Jay. What do you think of the time gem? I mean, for a beater, it's solid.
Yeah, I should clarify. It does have 1 minor difference to a calibration matrix, which is it also rerolls failures, and the calibration matrix doesn't. But fundamentally, it's a similar effect. I think this is really interesting. I think, though, that it is miles better with Thanos than either of the other time bearers. So bear in mind the timing of this effect. It happens after the modified dice step. So every reroll or dice modification that you and your opponent have access to in your attack sequence is functionally irrelevant if you use this power. You know? Things like Web Warrior's defensive rerolls, MODOK's ability to turn your dice into your wilds into blanks, cover, right? All of this stuff, your ability to reroll your own attack dice, right? All of that stuff doesn't matter, because after you've done all of it, you're then picking up all the dice and doing 1 last reroll, and there won't be an opportunity to use any of those effects again. So it is good at cancelling some offensive abilities. It's good at cancelling some defensive abilities. It kind of acts a little bit like Venom's passive ability that stops your opponent modifying your dice. On top of that, though, if you look at who can carry it, Doctor Strange already has an ability with Aya Bakamoto to reroll all his dice. And so that makes this effect not especially appealing on him, let's be honest. Like, do you really want to pay extra threat and power to have a duplicate of this effect? Probably not. And Corvus, I think, let's be honest, if you want dice manipulation, you just take the take Reality Gem. So I think this is only for Thanos. But on Thanos, it's much more appealing because he gets this effect for free on every attack he makes. So for Thanos, because he doesn't have to spend the 2 power cost, he is getting the option to have a do-over on all his attacks. It's giving him... and he is not a character that has inherent dice manipulation. So he has no downside, like no dissynergy between his suite of powers and this gem, unlike Doctor Strange. And he is nullifying a lot of defensive abilities his opponent might have. So I think for Thanos in particular, this is quite an appealing option to improve his offensive output. And it goes hand in hand with him still being able to have Corvus with the Reality Gem. And so you can have 2 Black Order characters that are both boosting their offensive output with gems simultaneously.
I definitely get why you went there, and I think I agree with your initial assessment, right? I mean, ignoring the 2 costs is pretty big. I think it's just going to take me a while to adjust to the fact that Thanos is no longer just abusing extracts, and he's mm-hmm. now going to be this brawly-type character. Is that kind of what you're envisioning here?
Yeah, I have to say, though, it might be that AMG have taken with one hand but given with the other, and we might just see that Thanos' ability to abuse extracts now comes from Space Gem instead of Time Gem, because that still gives him a teleport. So we'll see about that one.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I definitely agree with you that I only really ever see this, again, super hot take of like 3 minutes of thinking about it. I really only see this being stapled onto Thanos. It'll be interesting to see it out there. Yeah, I mean, it's so weird for me to think about Black Order, because I do think they're going to go through a fundamental change, a serious fundamental roster change with all the things that were laid out to them. But it's like you said, basically ignoring all the defensive things is a very interesting way to approach the game. We're just going to roll the dice once, and that's what's going to happen. Sorry, Miles Morales, right?
Bear in mind, it is kind of better than that, because it's an optional thing.
Correct. Like, if the initial roll goes well, I'm going to keep that. If the initial roll goes well and poorly for me, then, well, we're just going to reset and come back to it. Absolutely.
Yes. And in situations where your opponent doesn't have any defensive tech, it's still giving you great option of rerolling everything if you attack with poorly. So it is a flat offensive buff for Thanos in basically every situation. It is increasing his output, but it's difficult to quantify exactly how much it's increasing his output.
Yeah, and Thanos does have built-in dice manipulation, but very situational.
Do you mean his boosting his attack dice with his gauntlet?
It's flip-side leadership.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. You're right. You're right.
I think I like the time gem the more I think about it. I think I like this idea of just, like, angry Thanos running across the table and beating on people.
Yeah. I think it's a fine option for him. Is it the best option? I don't know, because the space gem is now also an appealing option for him, and he's already been seen to like the mind gem. People already playing him sometimes with reality, with power, and even with soul. So I think Thanos is in a cool place where actually all of the gems are appealing with him, and you need to figure out which you prefer.
Well, yeah, but I'm not opposed to 8-threat Thanos, if we're being honest.
Right. I mean, Thanos now, there are no 2-threat gem options, right? So it used to be Thanos was between 6 and 10 threat. Now he's between 6 and 8. The question is, what is the config? Because, like I said, I think every gem has its merits. The ones that stand out highest for me are space and mind. But I think time and reality as dice manipulation tools are obviously very appealing. And the extra power generation from soul and power are not bad.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I'm excited to come back and talk about Black Order in another 3 to 6 months. We've had more time to mess around and fiddle with them. So, but the more I think about it, I like the time gem. I like this. I think it's interesting. And I think it's a really slick way to basically, like you said, this is pretty much just a Thanos buff.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a buff, because Thanos was terrorizing people with the previous iteration of the time gem.
Very fair.
Yeah.
It's a buff to his offensive output. It's definitely a change in how he plays the game, though, right?
Yes. And one of the things that this does is it reduces the cost of Thanos. You can't have 9-threat Thanos anymore. 9-threat Thanos was a terror in previous TTS leagues. So it's once again going to have big effects on how you play the affiliation. And it's very interesting to think about the options now and how it all shakes out.
Yeah, I mean, Mind Gem's still really good at him. I don't know. It'll be interesting. I see unaffiliated Thanos being really popular. And just, like, sprinkle gem of your desire onto unaffiliated Thanos, right? And I think that's the Thanos you're going to get. So I'm excited for the future of Black Order. I'm excited for the future of these characters kind of floating around. I think it's interesting the reality gem wasn't hit. I saw a lot of people kind of clambering for that. But I think they did some really elegant changes to Proxima and...
Corvus,
thank you very much. I'm excited to see Ebony on the table more. I've always been a huge Black Dwarf fan. I'm a little sad he didn't get something, but that's okay. We can't complain too much.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Black Dwarf, by the way, will definitely benefit in terms of his table time from some of the other changes that are happening. The fact that Black Order will have more roster space and will want more different threat values in their character options might mean that he sneaks into those rosters regardless. And the fact that he is a size 4 character, and we're seeing models like Shuri no longer be able to push size 4, it could just be that he finds a home, even if he doesn't change.
Right. And if we're playing just affiliated Black Order, right, I see the Space Gem helping out Black Dwarf a lot. The fact that we're actually considering taking the Space Gem, any kind of way to speed up the old slow big fella, I think will be an interesting, interesting way to go about it. So is there anything else in Black Order you want to hit on, Pat?
I mean, it's been a lot of changes for them, right, because their cast of characters is so small and such a high portion of their team, everyone aside from Black Dwarf, have been iterated on. I think the other thing I wanted to mention is with the gem changes, they've changed completely in their roster construction. Like I said before, they no longer are taking up all this space with gems, but they don't have the flexibility of customizing their squad. So we talked already about how will this affect Black Order, we don't know. But what it does affect is it makes it much easier to dual affiliate and much easier to splash Black Order into your existing rosters, right? You can have something like the dreaded 15 threat core of Black Order with Thanos, Mind, Corvus Reality, and Proxima. It's only three characters now. It used to be five. And you could take that plus perhaps Mothership and have all of the best bits of Black Order for a relatively low roster building cost. I think it would be quite easy to put Black Order into a roster in the same way that we've spoken in the past on the pod, how it's easy to put Wakanda into a roster, like three characters in a tactics card.
Yeah, and a lot of times it was six roster slots because you wanted the double gem option for Thanos at times, right? So, I do think there will be splash. I don't think it's a hot take. We kind of said it before, right? I think we'll see Proxima a lot on affiliated. I think she's still a really good character, though in a very contentious three slot. I think splashing Corvus will be a thing because one slot reality gem Corvus is still going to be a beater. And I think Thanos is going to be interesting, right? Do you want aggro Thanos, right, at seven coming up with the time gen? Do you still want one of the control versions of Thanos? Definitely some interesting options there.
Yeah. One thing that I'm going to be looking at in this brave new world of random crises is perhaps one answer to how do you deal with so much crisis variance is you try and do a roster that can handle anything. And it could be that having three of your characters be Black Order is one way that you approach that, right? I could take my existing Sam Wilson Avengers roster. Proxima fits in great as a flexible three threat, tough character into that team already. And then I'm only giving up two roster slots to be able to completely change my strategy and play Black Order, right? And the kind of crises that Black Order are good on might be very different to the kind of crises that like a six wide Avengers team or seven wide Avengers team are good on. So that could be one way to handle this random crisis selection.
And again, we've heard your cries for a crisis focused episode. We just want to be sure we do it justice, and we're waiting until we just have a little bit more under the belt before we talk about it. But we have heard you all asking for it, and we promise we will get it out there. All right, Pat. So last time, you nailed multi-time Grammy nominee Carly Rae Jepsen. That's a blatant lie. But you nailed Carly Rae Jepsen. So I'm picking another one-hit wonder for you here, Pat. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Where it began, I can't begin to knowing. But then I know where it's growing strong. Was in the spring, and spring became the summer. Who'd have believed you'd come along? Hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Sweet Caroline, good times never seem so good. I've been inclined to believe they never would. But now I look at the night and it doesn't seem so lonely. We filled it up with only two. And when I hurt, hurting runs off my shoulders. How can I hurt when holding you? One touching one, reaching out, touching me, touching you. Sweet Caroline, good times never seem so good. All right, Pat. Do you know the artist?
So obviously, the song is Sweet Caroline by Neil Diamond. I love that you chose this song, TT. Did you know that this song had become the unofficial anthem of the England football team?
So I had a suspicion, but I wasn't sure if it was an internet rumor, and I wanted to talk to you about this. To me, this is the unaffiliated national anthem of Britain, But I don't know, right? Why. I have no concept of why. Because Neil Diamond, obviously Neil Diamond isn't a one-hit wonder, but Neil Diamond isn't British.
No, right? It's America, right?
Maybe Caroline was a British woman. I don't know. I don't know why you all fell in love with it and adopted it. I thought you'd get in the groove and start pounding the table and sing the refrain for me, but you didn't. That's okay. I don't understand why your people have latched onto this song. Of all the great music we've created in the United States, why Sweet Caroline?
I know, and it's a bit of a mystery. And actually, during the Euros, where England did pretty well, and this song was sung often, there was a lot of questioning in the media about why Sweet Caroline? And one of the best arguments I've heard is actually it's just one of those songs that's really good for a crowd of people to sing along to. Like the refrain, the way it works, the pacing. If you tune in to one of the matches or even after one of the matches for the England team and just listen to the crowd singing it, it sounds good, right? It actually sounds quite nice. And it's difficult to find a song where tens of thousands of people can sing it in the open air and actually have it sound good. So I think that's the key to its success.
That's interesting. I don't think that the mob is self-aware enough to know how good or bad their singing is. But that is an interesting theory there, right? It's like the Queen song, We Will Rock You, right? Is another one where you stomp your feet, you clap your hands, and you think you're creating a symphony.
Exactly. And I mean, with football songs, right, there's no end of the number of songs that fans sing at football matches, but some of them just rise to the top, right? People self-select them. And like you said, maybe the mob isn't consciously doing it, but the songs that sound better or are more fun to sing, or more people join in with, right? They're the ones that get sung more frequently. And Sweet Caroline has risen to the top.
Do you watch Premier League, Pat?
Not really, if I'm being honest.
Okay, that's fine. I'm a Chelsea fan, so I'm very excited about this year. So,
nice. Good luck.
Thank you very much. So we want to thank each and every one of you for listening. We hope that you all are Chelsea fans, and if not, we apologize for your poor taste. We hope you enjoyed the Black Order episode. We are both very curious about where Black Order is going to go. So we hope we shed some light, give our opinions on the stuff, and we would love to hear about where you're exploring. You can reach us on Discord, and then Pat's on all the super social media Twitter things. You can get at him. He loves direct messages. It's his favorite thing in the whole world. So we do want to thank each and every one of you for listening. Patreon, stay tuned for the After the Credit Scene. It's a small bonus episode we give people every week, about 15 to 20 minutes. If you're interested in becoming a patron, supporting us and the website, you can check that out at patreon.com/crossthebifrost. Until next time, everyone, cheers. And happy gaming.
Somewhere across the Bifrost, way up high, there's a pod that I've heard of once in a lullaby. Skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true.
I legitimately didn't know if that was the British anthem that people kind of made it out to be. Because one of the things is we don't get to hear that song in the English viewings of the Euro games because we really get is action. Because I'm saying this is an interesting way, soccer is not set up for the American monetization scheme that we expect from our sports. Our sports all have breaks in them where we can insert advertisements very easily. Soccer doesn't have that break. So we kind of, whenever there's a break in play, it immediately goes to commercial so they can recoup some of the money, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Whereas for us, it's a little bit different. I'm actually checking now. I'm trying to find a YouTube clip for you. But I'm just bogged down by adverts.
English fans and players singing Sweet Caroline together. At Allianz Arena. These are dirty Man U fans.
This one is probably fine. Yeah. I'll put it in the Discord so
people will be thoroughly confused.
This one's perfect. Do, do, do.
Yeah, that's what I thought you'd do when I was saying bump, bump, bump. Anyway, that's fine.
I was actually wanted to join in, but I love your spoken word song so much I couldn't resist letting you do it.
You always can jump in, Pat.
There you go. I have put it in a thing.
I can't watch this in the US. I'll have to get a VPN, but that's fine.
You can't watch it?